The views and opinions expressed by any guest or host of WJMS Media do not reflect the beliefs of its owners or associates. No liability, explicit or implied, should be extended to WJMS Media or its show hosts, whose words, advice, and/or opinions appear from or on our website or on air.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Are we on the air?
This is WJMS Media.
Jam.
This chick is a sick individual.
You're tuned in to Sound Off with your girl Jams right here on WJMS Media.
There is no competition.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Sound Off right here on WJMS Media. It's your girl, Jams. I know you guys have not seen me in a very long time, and there's a good reason for that. I have been a little busy, but I am very excited to be back behind the microphone once again. It's been, like I said, I think my last show was, I almost want to say it might have been like at the beginning of this year. And I am so sorry about that. But, you know, day-to-day operations and life in general just tend to get in the way sometimes of, you know, really getting on and doing the content that you want. But that being said, I'm very, very excited for this show this afternoon. I have a really, really special guest. And it's nice because it's a local, this is going to be a local flavor kind of show. So for those folks that don't know, you know, we're based out of Georgia right now. And so I've been down here in Savannah for a couple years. And I've met some really awesome people down here. And today I get to spotlight one of those people. Before we get into the show, as you know, we are live on our Facebook page, our Facebook group page, and also our YouTube page. So please, if you're watching right now, feel free to share the content with your friends and family. Have them tune in, especially if you're in Georgia, because we have, like I said, a local show happening today. So also want to remind you that if you comment on the broadcast, I can read it out loud. So you can interact with us, ask us questions, give us kudos, you know, voice your opinions or your support, whatever you'd like to do. So please feel free to comment and tag and, you know, just interact with us throughout the hour as we have this conversation. Very, very excited today. And you know what? It's October and it's spooky season. And y'all know that this is like my favorite time of season. So I'm super happy to be in front of everybody and able to talk about stuff. But anyway, let's get into it. I don't want to waste any more time. So my special guest for today is Chef Val Domingo. He's based out here in Georgia. He just opened a brand new restaurant in Rincon called The Sated Spoon. So if you haven't checked it out, we will tag the show or the business and everything so you guys can actually go look at it, follow it, and more importantly, go support it. He's originally from Charleston. His mom and his dad are both excellent cooks. His mom was more of a baker and the gardener, and his dad was more of the actual cook. The Sated Spoon is the restaurant that he just opened back in September. I believe we were just talking before the show, and he said that it's their 1 month anniversary, which is pretty cool. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too, and how that first month has been. But the Sated Spoon is a gourmet food market where guests can come in on their lunch break or just stop in on their way home, and you can pick up ready to eat meals. So for folks that are on the go like myself, this is very big. They have a provision or they have provisions and sides where guests can purchase house-made breads, jams, pickled veggies, various dips and salad mixes and desserts. I've had some of their food too, and it's really good. So I can actually vouch for it. And then also the ready-to-eat meals include house-pressed paninis. They've got entrees as well as some pre-made pizzas and some other things that can be easily heated up in the oven. So if you don't have a lot of time to cook or reheat, we also have that covered too. Menus are tweaked weekly, and his private chef operation is actually entwined with the Sated Spoon. So he does offer the opportunity to do a private chef catered event for you, as well as, you know, provide you with your ready-to-eat meals. His first job was at 14 in the or first got involved in the kitchen at age 14. And his first job was McDonald's. We're going to dive into that because a lot of people start their first jobs at McDonald's and never have anything good to say about it. We're going to talk about it. Some of his accomplishments. He's a military vet. He served 4 years in the Navy submarine force as a cook and baker. We're going to get into that, too. His first sous chef position was at age 26, which is very impressive. First executive chef position at age 31, also impressive. And in his career, he's opened 6 restaurants, 2 hotel restaurants. He's a corporate chef in Atlanta for an Atlanta restaurant group. And in Savannah, he helped to open the former Mission on Forsyth Park and the Perry Lane Hotel. Now, I don't want to take all of the credit. I want to give him an opportunity to talk a little bit about, you know, where he's from and what he has going on. So I am going to welcome to the stage right now, Val Domingo. Welcome, Val. How are you doing today?
Hey, how are you?
Doing really good. It's good to see you outside of our dog walk.
Exactly. Happy Sunday.
Yes, yes. So I kind of gave the audience a little bit of a background on who you are and a little bit of your upbringing, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about the present, you know, and sort of from COVID to now, sort of what brought you to where you are today. So why don't you give the audience a little bit more of a history on yourself and the Sated Spoon, and then we'll dive right in.
All right. So, hey guys, thanks for having me. During COVID, I had to reinvent myself. I had previously opened the Perry Lane Hotel here in Savannah as one of our sous chefs there. And, when COVID happened, like a lot of us, we in the hospitality field as well as in various fields, we had to figure out how to pivot from that. And one of those options that came across my line of work was becoming a private chef. And so I initially started with a group called Food, Fire, Knives, and they're based out of Charleston. And then a year later, I started doing more private chef events on my own. And then I just really wanted to see if I could actually open and run a location, like a brick and mortar place. And with meal prep being so popular and everyone's on the go and everybody's rushed with life and all that craziness, I just felt that, I should look into more meal prep, ready to eat meals. And that kind of led me to the Sated Spoon, which is located in Rincon, Georgia, which is about 25 minutes north of Savannah. So I found a small little place. It's about 1,000 square foot kitchen, and it's the perfect size for what I need to do as far as executing this ready-to-eat meal program as well as continuing my private chef business. So we just opened in last September, September 7th, I believe. I purchased the property in August. We opened in September, and it's been a pretty interesting ride so far, to say the least.
Absolutely. And I came on opening day because I wanted to show my support, and I walked away with some focaccia bread, which was really good. And I got the garlic Parmesan breadsticks. Yeah. And then, first of all, I'm not supposed to be eating all this bread. Like, my husband's going to kill me. But no, I walked away with those two breads. And I also got your apple cinnamon butter, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was so good. So I want to, before we get into all of the menu, how you came to, create the menu and curate it, I want to dive a little bit more into your background to see kind of like where Chef Val came from.
Yeah.
So you said you've been in the kitchen since you were 14, which, is kind of cool because when I was 14, you couldn't pay me to get in the kitchen. But that being said, both of your parents being good cooks, which is also very rare. Normally in a relationship, like one or the other is a cook. You know what I mean? Like you very rarely find the two that both cook. So which one of your parents would you say that you like identify with more in the cooking realm? Like, is there one of your parents who you kind of get more inspiration from for their cooking, or is it like a combination of both?
It really is a combination of both, because I didn't go to culinary school at all. So, I learned hands-on from both my mom and my dad. My mom, like I mentioned earlier, she's more of a baker and gardener. And we always grew up with a small garden in the backyard. So trips to like fast food restaurants were pretty much non-existent. And if they were existent, it was like on a special treat day, if you will.
Yeah.
But my dad was more of a cook, and you know, he was in the military as well, in the Navy, and retired there. And back then, when he was in, my dad's like 89 now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, back when he was in the Navy, African Americans and Filipinos, the only job that they could have was being a cook. And so that's what he joined in as from the Philippine Army and stuff. He went from the Philippine Army to the U.S. Navy in the Philippines. And so that's what he did for a good while until the rates were able to open up. So, but, you know, Filipinos, we love to cook. You know, everyone associates good food with, you know, this guy at Filipino. Oh my God. Good. Yeah. I've met a quote unquote bad Filipino cook.
Well, that's a lot of pressure for the Filipino community.
Well,
it sounds like you kind of followed your dad's footsteps a little bit in terms of like the military career and all that. So What was it like being a Navy cook? Because I don't know, it's probably, I'm a little, you know, uneducated in the ways of the military, but from what I know, I mean, most of the time military folks, whether it's Army, Navy, Marines, whoever, you're not really eating for enjoyment. You're like at mess hall, just eating, trying to get this meal in because you got to run off to do this, that, or the third. So What is it like, or what was it like being a Navy cook?
So I was on submarines. So the idea for cooks on the submarine is to actually boost morale.
Okay.
Because we're underwater for however many length of time, you know, between 3 and 6 months, you know, and you're seeing the same people every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, you definitely want to spruce up the menus a little bit better than, and they always say that the best food in the Navy is on a submarine, mainly because we don't have the space to bring in ready prepared meals.
Right.
Where we actually had to cook everything from scratch. So, yeah, a good bit. I mean, it's not everything, but I would say probably about 70-80% of ingredients was made from scratch, like the pizza doughs on pizza nights,
wow.
You know, fresh breads, the whole nine yards. And what's crazy is one time when I was on the baking rotation, my 60-quart mixer that I used to make bread in broke. And so it's not like we can call, you know, a Hobart technician to come out, hey, can you come fix it? So we're basically rolling kneading dough by hand, you know, and that's a lot of bread for 110, 115 sailors, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I love the experience. I love the fact that we get to travel quite a bit. You know, I've been around the world, and not many people can say that. And so, you know, and for free. So, so it was kind of nice, you know.
So, all right, you're cooking underwater. I have several questions that are jumping from that. Number one, I'm in facilities. So how are we ventilating the space underwater? Because you have to be, like, the kitchen ovens and stoves have to
have
a stack.
We have air vents in the kitchen.
Okay, but is it just blowing out underwater?
You know, this is like 20, 30 years ago, so I can't really remember how it works.
I'm just thinking, because I'm like, I know there's regulations on like ventilating the kitchen when you're cooking. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what? Underwater? Mm-hmm. And then how are you can't bring in fresh ingredients. So, I mean, what kind of, did you guys have to plan that menu in advance?
Oh yeah. Well, there's a Navy approved menu card box, and it has the menus and the ingredients and everything. So, you know, when the chief of the the head of a cook division. He chooses the menus and what needs to be made, and you know, we order accordingly beforehand, and we can store probably, I think we can store up to 6 months of food.
Okay.
Or ingredients, you know.
Yeah.
Between eggs and milk and all that fun stuff. But so sometimes you would run out of milk, and then then you have that, what they call the white death, which is the powdered milk and stuff, and
with water.
No one drank that. No one drank that at all.
So I assume as you come up for air in the submarine, you know, like you guys are refreshing supplies and maybe getting things repaired that are broken. Is that how it's working?
We service. Well, I was on a fast attack sub, so there's two types of submarines. There's a fast attack, and there's the what we used to call boomers or Trident submarines. Those guys go out 3 months out at a time and don't come up. But the fast attack subs, we go out at a minute notice, and wherever we pull in a port, you know, we have we have to get supplies and stuff like that if it's available. But for like food wise, we have all that stuff stored. Okay. In our coolers and stuff. So
what was like your key? What would your key takeaways be from your Army or your Navy cooking experience? You know, like what kind of stuff did you take from there, if anything, that you're now working with now, or just maybe did it help train you in any way, or like just what was?
We were able. I didn't know that you could leave eggs out all day long, and we would leave flats of eggs out, you know, above a griddle and stuff, and it would be just fine. It would just sit there and it would be okay, you know. What else? You know, the whole reading recipes and you know, being able to follow them to a T, you know, that helps as you get out into the real world and have to be consistent in your product making, you know. So that's always important, and you know, just the whole camaraderie, the teamwork behind it. You know, it's not like on a aircraft carrier or a bigger surface ship where you have like, you know, 40 cooks or 30 cooks or however many cooks. I mean, there's like maybe three cooks on the boat, and one guy that does one guy that pulls a product. He's called the jack of a box, I think is what we used to call him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the guy that pulled everything for the cooks, and then there's one cook that worked the overnight shift because they get fed four times a day. So mm-hmm. breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then they called midrats, and that's usually like leftovers from a night or from the night before.
Okay.
So those guys, that guy would work overnight, and he would also be the night baker and take care of breakfast, and then the other cook would come in for lunch and dinner.
Okay.
And yeah, we just all try to help each other out as best we can.
So I'm going to just go out on a limb here and assume that the key takeaways from working at McDonald's as your first job were not that many. What was that experience like?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was tough. That was very challenging. You know, just seeing all that grease get collected into the grease trap there and having to empty it out. And yeah, it was just, I swore to my mom and dad, I was like, I'm not doing this ever again. Yeah, it was just nuts. I mean,
the quality of McDonald's is just nothing compared to the quality of a home cooked meal from mom or dad. And you're like used to being in a kitchen with a fresh garden and then going to McDonald's. It's like, and working at McDonald's, you're like, this is not it.
Like, I mean, at least at the time when I was a kid, we were using actual real ground beef, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it wasn't like soybean patty or
Disclaimer, McDonald's. Yeah. We're not coming at you or nothing.
Yeah, no.
Trouble from McDonald's.
It's not a big fan.
Right. And so from the Navy, you know, your accolades are pretty impressive to be a sous chef at age, 26, and then executive chef at 31.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty accomplished, right? I mean, I'm not super well-versed in chefdom, but I know that's sous chef and exec chef are big deals. So, like, how did all that come about? And, you know, was there had to have been a lot of pressure on you to, you know, get to these roles and to really actually hold them?
Yeah, you know, my first sous chef role was very challenging. I worked for a French Portuguese chef in Charleston, and he was very vocal.
I know what that means.
And, but I worked with him right after I got out of the military, and worked my way up to that sous chef role. And I was actually quite surprised that he had offered me that, just because of the relationship that we had. But looking back at it now, he groomed me quite a bit, you know, and I just didn't realize it at the time because I was young and ignorant a little bit. Yeah. So, but yeah, I worked at this, there was a restaurant in Charleston called McGrady's.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a super high-end restaurant, and unfortunately it just closed during COVID, I think. At that time he had owned it, or he was with a group that owned it, and the French Portuguese restaurant was where it was above McGrady's. McGrady's was more like the tavern, American tavern, American tavern kind of deal. Yeah. So and he only had French cooks that worked upstairs, and I had kind of he had asked me to work up there one day, and I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And boy, he set me up really good.
Sent you to the wolves, huh?
yeah, it was absolutely nuts. But yeah, we had that love-hate relationship, and I think he's back in France now. I don't know, I've lost track of him and what have you, but he was an amazing mentor. Kind of wish I had just listened better. Back in the day.
Well, so I'm going to bring it all the way back a little bit. So for those folks who are, like I said, I'm not a chef expert. So break it down for the audience who's tuning in, what the difference is between like a sous chef and executive chef, because there's probably folks, myself included, who don't necessarily know what that difference might be.
Well, the sous chef's the workhorse.
Okay.
He's basically, there are some executive chefs that are workhorses as well. But the sous chef usually handles the brunt of everything. And, there's different levels of being a sous chef. And, there's the exec sous chef or the chef de cuisine that kind of oversees the restaurant if there's multiple outlets in an establishment, you know, and then and he handles all the sous chefs that are underneath him kind of deal. But yeah, but the executive chef is the guy that kind of, runs the menu, creates the menu, the whole nine yards. He works with if he's really good, he'll get input from his sous chefs, since they're the ones that are actually in the fire, producing, prepping, the whole nine yards. And then, and then the sous chefs kind of carry it all out from there, distribute the weight hopefully evenly amongst the rest of the team. So
okay, that makes sense. All right, I appreciate that. So sometimes it's like, you know, you get into these conversations and you're like, all right, we need to probably break down some of these common terms so that people actually know what that means.
Usually when the restaurants that are really popular, that are really good, I have a lot of great accolades. The executive chefs, you know, obviously get the credit, but it's the sous chefs behind the scenes that keep the place up to the executive chef standards kind of deal.
Okay.
So
I'm going to ask a couple of silly questions just to, before we transition over into the sated spoon.
Yeah.
Firstly, what is, because you said you've been around the world and you've traveled on submarines and whatnot, and you're a cook, so you know the different types. What is your favorite type of cuisine besides Filipino?
Oh man.
I'm not going to give you the easy answer. You got to give a different one.
Yeah. I love great Italian food. You know, it's something about the freshness of the ingredients, the mm-hmm. homemade pastas. And I know everyone's like trying to be watching their carb intake and stuff like that. But I mean, it really is just an interesting cuisine because it's so versatile. And it's not just pasta. You know, we got risottos and different types of herbs and you know, it just, yeah, cheese. Who doesn't love cheese? You know, exactly, right?
Cheese and bread and pasta. Like, just when I die, bury me in spaghetti. Like, that's it. It's simple as that. But so I guess then in that same token, say you had booked a celebrity guest come into some restaurant and you had one shot to make them a meal that you know was going to knock their socks off. What would that meal be? I guess I'm asking you what your specialty is or what's your dish? What is the dish that you make the best?
Oh my gosh.
It could be more than one if it has to be.
Yeah. I mean, if it's, wow. Way to put me on the spot.
I know. Chance of a lifetime. What dish are you going to knock their socks off with?
Gosh.
We can always come back to it if we have to.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I do. My pork chops are really out of this world. I have this one dish on my private chef menu. It's a sweet tea and bourbon brined pork chop that I actually just served yesterday to a bunch of people, a 70th birthday party. And, you know, it's hand cut pork chops. You know, I get the whole rack and I butcher it down myself. And I'm grinding the sweet tea and bourbon for like 24 hours. And I serve it with like a smoked Gouda mac and cheese and some bacon roasted Brussels sprouts, you know. And they were just like, you know, it's a big chop. It's about a 10-ounce chop. But, you know, everyone was just commenting as the same comments I hear all the time when people get this dish that when they cut into it, it's so tender. I'm like, it's not like a typical pork chop that will be dry or overcooked or whatnot, but it has a lot of it. You're just commenting on how much flavor that had. And you know, I mean, that's probably a good Southern dish that I like to impress people with, you know.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. I finish it off with like a bourbon peach barbecue sauce that glaze on there, and everyone just goes crazy over it. So
you had me at bourbon sweet. Yeah, I was like, what? And then like, you know, you always assume pork chops are going to be dry. Like make pork chops are like one of the hardest things to cook because it's like.
Yeah.
That internal temperature is very tricky.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you should. I always cook my pork chops to like 140 degrees, and then I let it rest, and that the whole residual cooking gets it up to about 150, which is where you want your pork chop to be for tenderness. And of course, it's also the quality of pork you get too. So yeah. You know, I mean. I use pork racks out of North Carolina, very Cheshire pig, and very, you know, no funny stuff in their feed, you know, and they're grass fed the whole nine yards. Not grass fed, but you know, we have a special diet that they consume, and but it's all natural, you know, all natural. That would be probably if I was like the that one dish, I guess, like for a seafood dish, I do seafood real well. That's it.
Okay.
Well,
I'm gonna challenge you to let me taste test these.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you know.
yeah, absolutely. Please. Yeah.
So there's one. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
I was just saying, like a seafood dish, I do when I can get in season redfish, which is a local fish here. And I do a shrimp and crawfish etouffee over it, and like a Savannah red rice kind of deal. I mean, as far as aesthetics, it doesn't look very pretty, but the flavor is definitely there. Everyone seems to like that. I try to cook as much local ingredients and product as I possibly can, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, with the different cuisines and whatnot, I still try to use as much of that local product and kind of use the region in there somehow, you know.
Yeah, we're going to get into that too when we start talking about the logistics of the Sated Spoon and, like, you know, getting those farm fresh ingredients that you're bringing in and stuff. So we'll definitely dive into that.
Cool.
One more fun question and then we're diving in. So, all right. And I'm only saying this because I made my brother watch the show, but there's a show on, I want to say Hulu called The Bear. Have you watched that show?
Oh, of course.
How accurate is that? Like, is that really how chefs operate?
It's very accurate. I mean, it's probably, I watched that show and I was getting like little PTSD moments from when I was in kitchens and especially in opening restaurants and what have you, opening with a Sated Spoon the same way. I mean, it's so stressful and so intense and everything may seem to go your way, and then the day of, it's just like it just all crap.
Yep.
Can I say crap? I don't know.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
yeah, it just all goes to crap, and you know, having to balance that and still be, you know, the leader, so to speak, mentor, mm-hmm. kind of deal to your staff is really, really, really tough. And you know, I've lived that, and this is the reason why I haven't opened a brick and mortar actual sit down restaurant. I'm like, I'm 51 now. I don't really want all that stress.
right. And yeah. My brother is a chef as well, and he's been a chef for as long as I can remember. I watched that show, and I was like, I need you to watch this show and tell me how accurate this is. And he was like, That's pretty accurate. I was like, you guys really operate like this? I was stressed just watching it. And I'm like, I don't even cook. And I'm like, I got to get out of this kitchen. Like, I can't do it.
It's tough.
It's
a tough industry.
So. All right. So, that brings us into the real reason you're here, besides the fun conversation part of it.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Sated Spoon. And because you and I have been connecting a little bit on our walks in the morning, and I know that there's been some hiccups and there's been some back and forth and things with getting this, you know, getting the business open. So congrats on your 1 month anniversary. But can you talk a little bit about what led you up to where you are? I know that there's been some, you know, like, all of the different, you know, authorities that needed to come in and make sure you were good. So let's talk a little bit about the struggle, and then let's talk about how beautiful things have been for the first month.
Yeah. So it's definitely been challenging, especially, you know, when I say I've helped open restaurants, you know, I was assisting, you know, the owners, the, in some cases, the chef, you know, in creating menus, but being the owner and the chef,
mm-hmm.
and basically wearing all the hats, you know, it's been a challenge, you know. And then, you know, trying to find you know, good help, and that's all part of the challenge, you know. And so, you know, that and dealing with the authorities to make sure I have the proper licensing and what have you, I just threw more fuel to a fire, so to speak. And you know, watching my bank account go from X amount of dollars to much less, you know, I was like, okay, this is the real deal right here. You know, this isn't actually helping open. This is, you're it, you know, and understanding that mindset and trying not to freak out a little bit, you know, or trying to keep calm composure, definitely rely on my faith a lot, you know, and my small team of guys and girls that helped me get it open, you know. So I'm indebted to everyone, you know, that has been able to put their two cents in, and because I couldn't do it all. There's no way in heck I would have been able to get this open in time. Yeah. You know? So.
And you have been pretty even keel. Like, I mean, even with all the stressors, you know, because I was like right before the week before opening and stuff, like, I feel like that was like fever pitch for stress. And like, you just seem, at least on the walk, you seem very even keel.
That's why I love doing those walks with my dog, you know. It just helps me to, just helps me to think more clearly and clear my head and prioritize what the things I need to do, you know. And sometimes, you know, I'm the type of guy that if I don't get everything accomplished that day, I tend to either really stress out or get really moody. You know, and so having to learn how to deal with that and try not to freak out as much, you know, and take it, you know, this is what I can do today. This is what are my priorities, you know, and trying to realign my day, you know. Before I used to be able to walk my dog Maggie, you know, like 4 or 5 miles every day and what have you, and leave at like 7:30 and be back by 9:00. And now I'm waking up at 5:30 to get on the walk by 6:30, you know, and it's usually around my house or around my neighborhood, you know. And so that's only like maybe like two miles, which is fine. So because I'm walking and able to get some time to reevaluate and rethink and prioritize, you know, that has been key, you know. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask, because, you know, you've opened what, 6 restaurants, 2 hotel restaurants, you know, you've been part of some seriously awesome teams. What makes the Saving Spoon different from these other ventures that you've been a part of? Or is it sort of like accumulation of all of the things that you've done so far?
It kind of is like a accumulation of everything, but at the same token, it's different. You know, the Saving Spoon, like I said, is we're a food market, you know, and so it is grab and go. So, you know, right there has been a little bit of a challenge for me, because, you know, chefs, we like to create things and make things look pretty and present, you know, to guests and get the feedback of oohs and ahs and this is great and what have you. And so now it's like putting stuff in, you know, trying to plate stuff nicely in and meal prep containers. And, you know, and then, you know, trying to not make so much so that, you know, everything stays fresh and what have you. So it's definitely different. It's definitely more challenging. I definitely didn't kind of think this through at the beginning, and so it was definitely a big challenge at the beginning, trying to adapt to that style. And then also, you know, listening to guests and seeing what they would like to have, and just in conversations or whatnot. But everyone, for the most part, I've been really blessed in that. For the most part, I haven't received any negative comments about the food or how everything tastes. It's all been very positive.
Delicious.
And, you know, I just can, you know, I can just be thankful for that and continue to grow on that. And you know, again, before it was just me assisting or being on a team, you know, and now it's really just me and my pastry chef, you know, to make things happen. And, you know, I do have a little bit of help now, which has been great, and definitely much needed and appreciated. But at the end of the day, you know, it's me that's it's my name that's on everything that's going out, and my reputation, and trying to adjust that reputation and create that with a meal prep environment, you know, is definitely a lot more challenging than if I was at a restaurant, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a perfect time for us to segue into you shouting out your team, since they are definitely integral in you pulling this off. So why don't you take a second and shout out all the key players on your team who have helped you get to where you are right
now? Yeah, definitely my social media IT guy, Alejandro Gutierrez, has been an integral part of my private chef and the State of Spoon aspect of it, because, he's very smart in creating websites and all that fun stuff. And I tried to do that once and definitely could not do what he does. my pastry chef is amazing. Her name is Artiana Owens, and she has her own business called Arte's Cakes and Confections here in Savannah. And she does amazing cakes and desserts as well. And she used to be one of my pastry chefs at the Perry Lane Hotel. And, she's kind of like me, kind of trying to do her own thing as well. And so definitely, if you have a chance to support her and her business, you definitely should. My girlfriend, Doreen, she's kind of painted. She didn't paint, but she's decorated the interior of a place to make it more inviting and welcoming, and has some really great ideas for that. So we've got my cousin Delma. I can't forget to leave her out, because she's my lumpia wrapper. And in case you don't know what that is, that those are the Filipino egg rolls, and she's it's like one of our top number one sellers. Everyone always picks those up. It's so hard to keep up with a production of that, because she works, you know, and so it's like when she has time to roll it, she rolls it, and it's usually on the weekends. So, without that team, you know, I definitely would not have been able to keep it open, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to the teams that keep things running, including the team that makes WJMS run as well. So myself, of course, my dad, Steve, he's also like my official unofficial board of director, is what we joke about, because there's only one. It's like just him, and to everybody else, the interns and everyone that helped keep me going, because I don't think, like you said, I don't think I could do this whole thing by myself. It's just too much work, you know. And I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, you've seen like my show is very few and far between because of how much work goes into just the day to day operations of the media company. But yeah, shout out to teams, because teams are very important. So one thing I noticed when I had the food there on the opening day is that everything is very fresh. And I know part of your sort of business plan and business strategy is to use farm fresh ingredients for all of your stuff. So for those that don't know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, I guess how you selected the local farmers that you're working with and what that process is to like get their ingredients into the shop?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of it has to deal with building relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So being in restaurants for as long as I have, we've been able to create some really great relationships with some of the local farmers and businesses. For example, Better Fresh Farms in Metter, they used to supply us at the Perry Lane with their garden varietals, their romaine, their signature blend lettuce, which is their art, which is like a baby lettuce blend, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, that relationship has carried on up to now. It's been a few years since I've been away from restaurants and what have you, you know, since COVID. You know, yeah. So to be able to maintain that relationship throughout the years has been crucial. And, he's always said that whenever his name is Grant Anderson. And he's always said that if I ever get a chance to open up something and I could use his product, to let him know. And sure as hell, heck, when this thing became more a reality, you know, I definitely reached out to him, because his produce is amazing. Like, you buy lettuce at the grocery store and you maybe get like a day or two out of it if you're lucky. Yeah. His product lasts for a good 2 to 3 weeks, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then like the Springer Mountain Farms chicken, those guys, I actually met them when I used to work in St. Simon's, and their family used to come to one of the restaurants I used to work there and be able to vacation down there. And that's how I kind of met up with those guys, you know. So it's always been, you know, a connection in restaurants. Same thing with a beef that I use, Brasstown beef in North mm-hmm. Carolina. I use them primarily for my private chef stuff, because their stuff's a little bit more pricier. It is, you know, when I lived in Atlanta, I kind of oversaw 6 restaurants in Atlanta, and was kind of a corporate chef. And anyways, we used their beef for our burgers kind of deal. And so was able to go up to that farm and see the whole process of how they raise these cows and get the tour and you know, see the passion behind these guys. So these are all important to me as I select who I want to partner up with, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's like bigger purveyors, like farmers and fishermen in Atlanta who are, you know, they carry a lot of great product, you know, great seafood products and what have you. And they travel down to Savannah, you know, twice a week. And for a local business guy, it's great because they have no minimum. So a lot of these bigger corporations, bigger vendors, they have minimums and they don't have minimums. So
yeah,
minimum orders. So it's great that I can just order what I need for when I need it, you know.
That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So, I mean, at this point, you know, COVID has played a major role in, you know, the opening of the Sated Spoon, because COVID allowed you some time to reflect and figure out what it was that you wanted to do. So do you think that you would have opened this, you know, this business no matter what? Or do you think that this was, you know, definitely due to COVID and you're having to sort of pivot and reevaluate things?
Well, I mean, originally, I was really really focused on my private chefing business, you know, and it's still going strong to this day. So I'm very, very fortunate to be able to do that. I guess it was, I guess it was last year when I just kind of had like a thought that maybe I could open up a brick and mortar establishment, you know. And then, you know, doing the research of what I knew I didn't want to do an actual restaurant just because of all the stress and I wouldn't be able to do my private chef thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to work like 80 million hour work weeks that I put in the restaurant. Now I work a lot of hours at the Sated Spoon. At least, you know, I can.
It's yours.
Yeah, it's mine. And I get to make my own hours and whatnot. So it just all became part of a whole idea, you know, just thinking about it. And, you know, we do have an off season as private chefs. And so I just thought, you know, if I could do open up a place like the Sated Spoon, it would be just extra income, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because, you know, we've only been open a month now, and the sales have been pretty good, a lot higher than I initially imagined it to be. Hoping to
get. Is this off season for chefs? Like, what's peak season for chefs, and what's off season for chefs?
For private chefs, for me, anyways, I can only peak season, or my season usually starts in March and mm-hmm. lasts all the way through. Through about September.
Okay.
And it's just nonstop parties left and right. I cater. I have a radius that I travel to. So I travel all the way up to Charleston sometimes.
Okay.
And I also, I'm in Hilton Head a lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot, especially in March. I could probably just live there. Yeah, because I traveled there quite a bit. And then obviously Savannah and what have you. But But yeah, Hilton Head keeps me busy. You know, families book me for, you know, a week, you know, and sometimes a week, sometimes a few dinners, you know, while they're there. So, and it's the same reason that the common reason is the fact that we don't want to have to wait in restaurants, or we don't have to, we have our kids and they want their kids to be able to play and not have to watch them as closely, you know, the whole nine yards, and they can come and sit in as they are, you know, whatever, whatever attire that they want to sit in, they're comfortable where they are, you know, and then you get a nice, you know, high end meal, you know, without the stuffiness, I guess, of a high end restaurant, so to speak.
And cost wise, it's got to be a lot more comparable, especially when you start looking at how much it costs to take like a family of four or five out to dinner nowadays. Yeah, you get a private chef and have them come to the comfort of your own home to cook your meal. And it's probably you're probably saving a little bit of money because it's not going to cost you as much with tips and gratuities. Right. You're obviously getting tips and gratuity, but like not the standard, like, you know, they tack it on top and it just it makes a lot more sense. So that's pretty good. So why Rinkin and not Pooler? You know, it's obviously there's a big, heavy push to, you know, bring Pooler up for whatever reason. They're putting everything in Pooler. So what is the thought process into like putting the business in Rinkin as opposed to there?
So Rinkin is definitely growing. When I first lived here back in early 2000s, I would, you know, there's only been a few times I had been up to Rinkin and I remember going through there. It was just all woods, you know.
Yeah.
It was really very rural, you know, not much there to do or whatnot. So, but now, you know, with Hyundai Plank nearby and you know, a lot of Gulfstream people that are living out there, and then you know, Savannah Pooler. Well, I don't know about Pooler, but you know, Savannah is definitely not cheap anymore. And Savannah is definitely inundated with a lot more people now, you know, getting that food accolades like Charleston and stuff has driven people to come out here and experience, you know, Charleston's sister city, if you will.
Yeah.
So, and they've stayed, they came, they visited and they've stayed. So, you know, and that's a great thing, right? You know, growth is a great thing, but that also means higher rents and higher, you know, taxes, you know, much longer wait times and trying to get things approved, you know.
Yep.
But Rinkin, you know, from a time in the last 5 years has doubled, tripled their population. And, you know, it's just getting bigger, you know, and I think, I mean, you drive down 21, you'll see all the housing developments that are coming up, you know,
and
a lot more businesses are starting to get into Rinkin, you know, and so, you know, when I found this spot, this strip mall off of 21, you know, I think it's called the Shops at 21 Center, you know, there's all the shops there are all locally driven, you know, there's not a Starbucks or there isn't you know, a Chick-fil-A in a strip mall. These are all local artisan shops, you know, local business owners. So, you know, they're going through that same struggle of trying to support local, you know, and one of the things that was mentioned to me many times, especially from the previous owners of a location that was there, of a business that was there, was that Rinkin, Effingham County, everyone here supports local, you know, local businesses. And I can't say how true that is. You know, I mean, everyone has been really supportive in town and you know, meeting all these great people and getting to know everyone, you know, and everyone says, yeah, we'll support you. We'll continue to support you. And it's true evidence in that, you know, that first couple of weeks when I was still trying to like, okay, I'm not going to have this ready yet, you know, and I was putting it out Facebook, you know, like, hey, I'm sorry, you know, I'm still trying to figure this out kind of deal. And everyone's been so supportive and so positive, you know, and like, don't worry, we'll come and visit you when you're up and running and when you think you're good, you know. So, you know, that kudos to the whole entire town of Rincon and Effingham County to come by to support me so far. Definitely appreciate all of that. So,
all right. Well, just a few more questions before we wrap. Sure. One fun question to end, of course, but what I want to know is, what is your favorite thing on your menu right now? I know that's probably hard to answer since it's a menu curated by you, but what is your favorite thing on the menu?
So our menu changes weekly. The meal prep menu changes weekly. I haven't really released a menu out, but I will say that a lot of my guests have been asking for other Filipino dishes, inspired dishes. Okay. So this week we are going to be featuring the adobo, the pork adobo. Ooh. Which basically it's a pork shoulder that's been braised. It's marinated in soy sauce and vinegar and braised with some peppercorn and bay leaves. And man,
it sounds good.
I should eat a lot of that. It's so good. Has a little bit of touch of coconut milk in there. We're going to serve it with cauliflower rice this time around to make it low carb for all my low carb guests and what have you. So
nice.
So yeah, I think that's going to be a big hit this week, you know.
Okay. All right. So one fun question and then just one more, and then I'll give you an opportunity to shout out, you know, information on the business, where people can go and all that good stuff. But real quick, what is the hardest thing you have ever had to cook? Or what do you still struggle with to this day trying to cook? Give people like me some hope. Like, can you not make rice? Because like...
Oh, I can make rice. I mean, yeah, Filipino. I gotta make rice.
Right. Like rice is like a staple. Okay, maybe not rice, but...
Okay, so this is kind of funny. You know, I usually make my stuffings from scratch and what have you, but, you know, yeah. Every now and then I'll try out the stovetop stuffing, add water to it. Always mess that up every single time. I don't know what it is. I'm just like, well, I guess I just have to make my own stuffing from now.
So let me get this straight. World-renowned chef, many years experience, and you can't make stovetop stuffing.
Exactly.
All right, I feel better.
Dry or two, I don't know what it is. I'm just like, I measured the amount of water, you know.
I love it. That makes me feel better for regular cookers like myself. But all right. So last question I have before I give you the opportunity to shout out the business once more is, what advice do you have to any up and coming cooks or anybody who might be in the industry feeling that burnout, you know, or just anybody who might be looking to open up their own kind of restaurant? Like, what would be a solid piece of advice that you can give somebody listening today?
Take a minute, breathe, you know, kind of calm down and reevaluate and reassess and prioritize what you can do. You're not going to get everything done on the first day or the second day, but, you know, make small goals for yourself so that they're easily manageable and achievable. Once you get those small, once you do that, then you can take on a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. But to try to do this, you know, to try to handle the stress and of life and work and what have you, you know, at one time it's not healthy, you know. That's what I would say for those that are trying to open up their own businesses. You know, definitely do the research. You know, evaluate your funds.
Yeah,
big time. you know, and just make sure you have a good business plan and you know who your audience is and what you're trying to do. If it matches up to the audience that you're trying to provide that service for, it's important. And be real with yourself, because if you're not real with yourself, then, you know, it's going to show through.
Yeah. 100%. Well, Val, thank you so much for being with me today. I absolutely enjoyed talking to you. I feel so good knowing that you can't make stuffing. It gives hope to me.
I can make stuffing.
He's like, no, I can make stuffing. But before we leave, I want to give you the opportunity to shout out again the business, your hours of operation and where people can find you on social media and stuff like that. So why don't you give everybody the rundown?
Absolutely. So we are located in Rincon, Georgia, at the shops at 21 Center. It's 169 Commercial Drive. If you'd like to come by and visit, still working on signage. That's part of a challenge of being a business owner. we have signs on the door. And my Facebook is The Sated Spoon. You can follow me on Instagram as well at Chef Al Domingo. And the Instagram for The Sated Spoon is at the_sated_spoon. We're trying to get that more in tune, but it is up and running. I don't do Twitter, so I think those are the social media pages. Definitely come by and see us. I'm always there. As far as hours, we are closed on Sundays and Mondays, Tuesday through Thursday, 10:30 to 5:30, Friday and Saturday, 10:30 to 2. However, those hours aren't really set in stone as far as the closing time, because if I have a private chef event, sometimes I close a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. But I definitely communicate that via Facebook, via social media, so that everyone is aware of that. And on the contrary, if I don't have any events, like on a Friday or on a Saturday, I definitely stay open till like 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. So come by and see us. Come get your meal prep. Every day is a theme day at the Sated Spoon. Tuesdays is I call it a Fat Tuesday deal. Or last week I ran a pimento cheese and bacon burger with a side of tater tots for like $14. Wednesdays buy a sandwich and get a free dessert. Thursday, get a meal prep entree and you get half off of some our house made garlic dinner rolls. And then Friday and Saturday we do game day specials like wings and what have you. Come check us out. We'd love to have you. We'd love to support your weekend of festivities, and come by the Sated Spoon.
I love it. Well, again, I want to thank you for spending the last hour with us and kind of talking through everything that you've been through and the awesomeness that you have going on at the Sated Spoon. Thank you so much. And I'm definitely looking forward to swinging back in, especially when you make that pork chop for me, because I'm going to go up there and I'm going to get that.
All right. Yeah. for you.
All right, folks. So I want to, again, thank you guys so much for being with us this afternoon. This has been such a blast. I am going to do my best to do more shows for you, I promise. In the meantime, I just want to thank everybody who has tuned in, who has waited, who's asked me when I'm going to be live again. Like I said, I'm going to do better and I'm going to try to come to you guys a little bit more often, even if it's just to tell my story and talk about my journey. But again, I want to thank everybody who tuned in, who commented, who popped in, said hello, and then popped back out again. More importantly, I want everybody who's out here in Georgia to please go and check out the Sated Spoon. Support your local businesses. It's folks like us that keep these businesses in play. So please make sure that you go out there and support. For everybody that tunes in on a regular basis, thank you so much. Remember, you can follow us at WJMS Media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, all those good things. We're also on YouTube as well. So make sure you connect with us so that you can keep on top of everything that we have going on. All right. So in the meantime, everybody be safe and be well. And I'll see you next time right here on WJMS Media.
Thanks for listening to WJMS Media, where media is reimagined. You can check us out on our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Also check out our website at www.wjmsradio.com. And we also have a newsletter so you can subscribe and be up to date on everything.